From 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Today on the show, a preview of the first park that will be built in Milwaukee's new Harbor District.
You'd be surprised how often we get emails and phone calls from people saying, my kid's really into boats. Where can I come down and watch the ships of the port? Now we're going to have an easy answer. We say, come down to Harbor View Plaza, you're going to have the best view of the port.
Then we'll have a preview of this weekend's Milwaukee Fringe Festival at the Marcus Center.
To me, that's just a great thrill and a great privilege to be able to spend my day going from theater performance to dance performance to music performance. It's heaven.
And on stage at the Fringe Fest is a former member of Milwaukee's legendary Theater X, back in town with a brand new show.
Back when we were in Milwaukee, we would do the exact same sketches one night for a prison and the next night for the Junior League Wives. And they would both laugh. They would both understand it, and they would both laugh.
Lake Effect is next. News is first.
This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. The story of Milwaukee's Menominee Valley over the past decade has been one of successful rebirth. What was once a blighted industrial and former industrial strip in the heart of the city is now filled with new businesses, a state park, and is bookended by a museum and a baseball stadium.
Many in the city would like to see the area designated as the Harbor District be the next redevelopment success story. It's Milwaukee's gateway from Lake Michigan and presents almost a blank slate in many ways, or at the very least represents an underutilized waterfront.
Tomorrow, a significant step towards that redevelopment takes place with the groundbreaking ceremony for the first park space in the Harbor District. It'll be called Harbor View Plaza. Dan Adams is planning director for the Harbor District. Before the massive changes to the area, he gave WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Benz a look at the area and explained what it will become.
So when it's complete, people, you know, come to it down Greenfield Avenue here. You're going to be able to see it from pretty far back. We're going to have some pretty big signage over here. And then next spring, we're going to be installing a very tall play structure that's going to be a shipping container. So it'll be visible, kind of turned on its end, so kind of a tower. So kids will be able to climb up inside it and from on top get a view of the area. So that'll be pretty visible from down the street. And then as you get closer, there's going to be a lot of new plantings, new trees, new native landscaping. There'll be a water feature in the middle.
Sort of a wetland thing?
A little bit. It will have some water in it, and there'll be native kind of semi-aquatic plants in it. And also feeding into that will be a little small water play area where kids will be able to use a water pump to kind of fill a little river area, which they can then dam and play in the water and things like that. And then that flows into the water feature. And then there'll be all sorts of seating, landscaping, and then at the water's edge, when you get all the way down here, is going to be the first canoe kayak launch in the area. It'll be ADA compliant canoe kayak launch, which will allow people to get right down to the water's edge. So even if they're not using a canoe or kayak, it'd be interesting to get down to the water, because so much of this area, you're elevated on the top of the dock walls. It's difficult to get that close to the water, and so this would be an opportunity for that.
So how much will you move into the water itself? Just a little bit?
We won't at all, except for the floating dock. The floating dock will obviously be on the water.
And the reason,
but the site itself just goes up to the dock wall.
And there's a reason for that.
There's a lot of reason for that. Once you cross the dock wall, there's a lot more regulations at play. It gets way more difficult, way more expensive. Not to mention, this is an active commercial shipping area, and so we don't want to take any of that waterway. You can see it's pretty narrow already from here to Jones Island. And so we're just using the space that's available here to get people to the water's edge so they get close enough, they can enjoy the ships, they can enjoy the beautiful scenery, which is funny. 20 years ago, no one would have considered this beautiful scenery, but now people want to come down here and see the activity. The city's heavy lift dock is across the way, so whenever the port's shipping in or out very large cargo, it all happens right there. So this will be, you know, ground zero, the best place to view that. And then, of course, all the loading over there. You can see right now, the Algoma Innovators over there unloading salt, fresh from the Goderich Mine in Ontario, the largest salt mine in the world. So this would be the best place for people to come down. You'd be surprised how often we get emails and phone calls from people saying, my kid's really into boats. Where can I come down and watch the ships of the port? Now we're going to have an easy answer. We say, come down to Harborview Plaza, you're going to have the best view of the port right here.
So people, in terms of access to the place, you have parking, you know, on both sides of the street on Greenfield, the
right.
side of the
railroad tracks, basically. So, yeah, all the parking will be right on the street.
Yeah. And you're hoping people will be biking here.
Biking, walking, taking the bus. We have, you know, multiple bus lines stopped just 3 blocks away here at First and Greenfield, so it's an easy way to get down here. We already have a lot of people that bike down here, especially lunchtime. You come down, a lot of people bike and sit here, and even in the state it's in now, you know, have lunch and watch the boats. But imagine how much more attractive it'll be once it's a functioning, beautiful, attractive park space.
We see this fencing right now.
Right.
Not so long ago, there was a coal pile there.
Yeah,
and beyond that were
ago.
Structures from the old Solvay plant.
Right.
So what's evolving in these spaces?
We have plans in the Harbor District Water and Land Use Plan for a suggested kind of program for what we'd like to see here, which would be a public waterfront. So this park we're talking about is kind of the first toe in the water, if you will, for public access down here. And we're hoping that it leads to many more public improvements in the future going down the waterfront here, and eventually part of a larger riverwalk system. Behind that, you know, the plan recommends a mix of commercial office uses, light industrial uses, things like that. The coal pile site, there's been no kind of news as of late of what's going on with that. Behind that, the Solvay Coke site owned by We Energies, there was an announcement.
Acres.
Yeah, about 45 acres. Two or three weeks ago, they announced they've been talking to Komatsu, who has been interested in that property. But I think there's still a lot of discussion to go to see if that'll work out. So we're waiting and trying to get information to see, you know, how future uses can kind of fit into the vision put forth by the Water and Land Use Plan that was adopted earlier this year.
So, Dan, how does the creation of this park, how significant is all this to the vision of the, including in that, I think, what is there, 9 miles of...
Yeah, you're right. You got that. 9 miles of waterfront in the district.
Yeah, yeah.
And so out of that 9 miles, the only place where the public can really get down to the water is the county boat launch about a half mile north of here, which is, you know, just a few very similar to this, a few benches and mostly concrete. And then really, there aren't any other public access points in that 9 miles. And so this park is extremely important in that it's going to provide a nice welcoming space for people to come down. Because I think if you go back 3 years to when we started our planning process, we started asking people questions about this area about, oh, you know, what do you know about it now? What would you like to see here in the future? We got a lot of blank stares and shrugs because there was no, right, there's no way for people to come down here. Even people lived a few blocks away said, well, I'm not really sure where you're talking about. And so this park will provide a space to kind of open that conversation up even further. And so while we have this plan, there's still a lot of details to be kind of framed out within that. And so this will kind of be the hook to get people into the conversation further and really experience the space and appreciate the working waterfront that Milwaukee has. So many people, when we talk to them, they think most of this is vacant and not used, and that's not the case. The port is very active. A lot of the businesses around here are active, and so this will provide a space for people to come down and see that kind of dance on the waterfront, the working waterfront that we talk down here, and gain an appreciation for it.
So we have the Riverwalk. And again, you know, we talked about access, about the potential of the public being able to, you know, walk or bike or jog, you know, bigger sections of these 9 miles. Is part of the vision that, you know, perhaps that could be built into the development, again, back where we're looking, where coal used to be stored, etc.?
Oh, yeah. One of the most popular elements, I think, of the Water and Land Use Plan was the proposed Riverwalk,
right,
which would go from where the Riverwalk kind of ends now in the north end of Walker's Point, along this whole western shore of the Harbor District and up the Kinnikinnick River, eventually on both sides of the river. We've been talking to property owners about it recently and kind of slowly advancing that conversation. We'll have to get creative with how it goes because there are operations at the water's edge that, you know, you don't want people walking through between certain boats and things like that. But I think our goal is to eventually develop a continuous network throughout this western edge of the Harbor District that provides a public access for people to get down to the waterfront, and it isn't disjointed. So, you know, if you're going for a jog or something, you're not zigzagging back and forth, and it's a pleasurable experience and you can get from point A to point B. And so we're working on the Riverwalk.
And here in the harbor, what is it, like 60% of the land or properties are privately owned by a bunch of people?
Yeah,
and that means
yeah.
negotiating with a lot of,
that is
you
very
know,
true.
Moving parts.
That's
right?
You did your homework. Because, yeah, I think about Jones Island adds up to about 40% of our land area. So, yeah, the other 60% other than the coal pile site here, is pretty much all privately owned. So yeah, we're following the model of what they did downtown, and then more recently in the Menominee Valley with the Riverwalk. We're pursuing a Riverwalk overlay zone. But yeah, that's kind of a negotiation with property owners and getting everyone to kind of buy in the vision and what it'll mean in the future. And you have to think more longer term, because as you know, the downtown Riverwalk, that overlay was put in, I think, 20 or 25 years ago at this point. And so it kind of built out incrementally over time, and we may have to do that here, although we're hoping to bite off some bigger chunks earlier rather than later, where there are opportunities.
Like where?
Well, right across the street here. I mean, simply because you don't have buildings at the water's edge or anywhere here, and so
it could be incorporated in its redevelopment.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Or, for example, the Michaels development, which was recently announced for the former Horny Goat Brewery site.
Right.
That's all their property,
right.
And their plans have a public riverwalk along their whole water's edge right there. And so I think that'll begin to change the conversation a bit as people understand that, oh, there is a possibility to bring public access to the water's edge down here.
Another percolating project is the Grand Trunk Wetland.
Yes.
And there's access built into that. Eventually these will be joined in some
way.
You
get the vision, Susan. That's exactly it. So right across the water over there is behind those grain silos
That's
is
true.
The Grand
it's
Trunk Wetland.
Far
it's
away.
Not that
I
far,
was thinking
but
it was being further.
If you think of the future potential Riverwalk, you go down this side of the KK River and you come back up the other side of the KK River. The Grand Trunk would essentially be the north end of that side of the river's Riverwalk. And so, yeah, there's planning going on right now, so even more planning. There's always more to be done. Both for how are they going to finish and actually construct the wetland, which is the $3 million grant the city got to work on that from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, but also how do we connect that wetland to public access in a manner that doesn't detract from the wetland. You got to be careful. You don't want people in there trampling the natural habitat, but you want them to have some ability to experience it so they can appreciate what it is, why it's there, the function it serves. The goal is that we're putting in these different nodes of public access that over time will fill in and connect a continuous network, both for people and eventually for animals, you know, fish, wildlife.
Another focus is the quality of the water that this is, we're sitting in an area of concern, right?
Yep.
Explain what that means and how that factors into the way you're thinking and planning.
So the area of concern is an EPA designation for Great Lakes areas where there are certain impairments to the water quality, and so Milwaukee.
Pollution.
Yeah, pollution, things like that. And so, yeah, the Milwaukee estuary of concern covers the inner harbor, the outer harbor, and our three rivers up to a certain point. And so, obviously, when we're bringing people down to the water's edge, we want it to be a pleasurable experience. We don't want people to go down onto our first canoe kayak launch dock and see a bunch of junk floating by or wondering about the safety of the water. And so there's a number of partners that have been working on it for a number of years, and I think it's gathering more momentum about just getting support behind different projects can address those pollution issues or the various impairments related to the AOC. So things like we're working on a project to install a trash wheel on the Kinnikinnick River.
Get to that. That would be near the Michaels, right?
That would be right basically
so
across the street from
that. So that would be an attraction.
That would be
for people.
Well, it'd be attraction in many ways. I think visually it would be an attraction,
yeah.
But it would be attraction that it would improve the water quality and
yes.
The aesthetics of the water, thus making a future Riverwalk and public access and Harborview Plaza itself even more attractive in the future when people know they can come down and the water is going to be a pleasurable experience as opposed to, you know, sifting through whatever's flowing down.
So explain where that is, why it's tricky, because it's sort of a bottleneck, isn't it?
Yeah, so the Kinnikinnick River is the smallest of the three rivers that flow into the harbor, and it's the most urbanized watershed. It's 99, if not 100% urban watershed. And so all the runoff that comes off our streets, parking lots, driveways, everything, all ends up in that river. But because it's the smallest...
And the junk with it.
And the junk, yeah. And when I say runoff, it's mostly junk. It's, you know, trash, litter, debris, whatever. And so right at the Beecher Street Bridge, so very close to Michael's development site, so Beecher Street Bridge on the KK River, that is the end of the navigable channel, so boats with motors don't go past that bridge. And there is also an MMSD property right there that would allow us to service a potential trash wheel. So if you put a trash wheel at that site and you have two booms going to each side of the river, that acts as a funnel that would collect all the trash flowing on the surface of the water and funnel it into this trash wheel, which would then dump it into a dumpster. And using the MMSD site for access, we could haul that away to the landfill, thus catching all the trash before it even gets down into the harbor, and hopefully making our waters out here very clean and pristine.
And there is such a wheel in
Baltimore.
Baltimore.
And so in Baltimore they've installed at least two of them, maybe three of them at this point. I know they were working on their third one. It is powered by primarily the flow of the river.
Okay.
So it's a water wheel like you would have seen on an old mill 1,000 years ago, you know, a millstone going around. They also have backup powered solar cells on top of the trash wheel. So it's all renewable energy.
And the vision is what could be recycled would be recycled out of that.
Ideally,
yeah. It doesn't all go to the landfill.
Right. It would go into the trash stream like we have here in Milwaukee, and so certain things hopefully would get sorted out.
That's not your job, though.
No. We're not. Well, other duties as assigned. You never know. We'll see. The big success about the trash wheel in Baltimore is obviously it's scooping the garbage out of the riverway, but it's had, and I don't know if this was intended or not, but kind of a galvanizing effect for the community with regard to awareness of water quality issues and just kind of the role that their harbor plays in their community. Because it's become somewhat of a local celebrity, it has very popular social media following. They can actually detach it and it floats around, and so they'll have kind of similar to our Milwaukee Boat Parade here, they have a parade there where they float the trash wheel in the parade and so everyone can wave to it and things like that. Yeah, so it's really built awareness of water quality issues out there for them, and we'd hope it would do the same thing here. This is ultimately the near south side of Milwaukee's waterfront. This is their lakefront, their access to the rivers and to Lake Michigan, so we want to make sure it serves them as it develops over the coming years.
So that balance of neighborhood, business, building jobs,
yeah.
But with that, you know, people are part of this, not like, oh, you know, the rent is going up.
Oh, we are very, very aware of that. And that's always a kind of fear, because you need investment for the area to change and to develop. But you also don't want that investment to drive out the people who live here now that could benefit from that investment and the people who have really contributed to the character and identity of the neighborhood now. You got to find that balance where the investment can provide new options and new things and new opportunities without pushing out the people who could benefit from those opportunities. And so that
diversity is a key.
Diversity
element.
Is extremely important. And throughout the planning process, two things that the community wanted to see from future development and change here in the Harbor District was, number one, access to parks and green space and to the waterways. They only have 1.8 acres of park per 1,000 residents, which is well below the city average of 8.8 acres of park, and then well below some of the lakefront communities in Milwaukee County, which are in the 20s and 30s acres of park per 1,000 residents. So we need more green space on the near south side. So that was a huge priority. And the other thing was jobs. Jobs that would be accessible to people that live in the neighborhoods nearby, which I think providing new jobs in a space that's close to where people can get to would be a win for everyone. It would provide new opportunities for people in the neighborhoods nearby, and then provide a huge labor pool for employers that might move into the area.
Dan Adams is planning director for the Milwaukee Harbor District. He spoke with Susan Bentz. Groundbreaking for the area's first park, called Harborview Plaza, takes place tomorrow afternoon. There is a link to more information about the project at WUWM.com.
Just to the south of the newly designated Harbor District is an area people have known is special for a long time. Bayview was one of the first places that we visited for a Lake Effect on-site. It's also home to poet and contributor Jenny Benjamin, who wrote a poem in honor of the show and the place that she calls home. Here she is from that broadcast reading My Neighborhood.
What borders are here around this house? Fernwood School fences, KK, a canopy of ash trees in the rain, lakeside sunrise, salt mountains, windmill, coffee houses, hat shop, soap shop, pet care, and bars, lots of bars, for sugar mapling the night away. My house in this neighborhood was repainted gauzy white, so in certain dusky light I see its name, watery pink like blood soaking through bandaged bundles, the trim seafoam green. Inside, my daughter's motions and emotions lap at me like waves from rival shores, and I wonder, where exactly is the summer lakeside shore? With pickup barbecues and fireworks, the cascade of music sounding from block parties, instant fire pits smoking and sending embers to my door. To the shore with garlic mustard overgrowth and groups of hunched figures plucking the weeds at the source. Seminary woods with lush green leaves, dogs frolicking and sniffing the layers of seasons falling on the paths, from green leaf to orange leaf to fallen brittle breaks to ashen bottom to snowfall to here I am again in my neighborhood, thinking what keeps us in and around each other. These markers of our days, these places, people, faces, family, these neighbors, Let them in.
Contributor Jenny Benjamin is a poet and writer who lives in Bayview. Her poem, My Neighborhood, was first broadcast on our Lake Effect On-Site show in February.
We'll take a quick break now, and then of the many gazillion things that seem to be taking place this weekend, well, among them is the Milwaukee Fringe Festival. We will talk with two of the founders when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. We are into the waning days of summer, and even though some theater companies have opened and closed late summer productions, the full onslaught of the fall season is still a few weeks off. There are, however, still plenty of theater shows to experience this weekend in particular.
We'll talk about the new Milwaukee Opera Theater and Theater Red productions on tomorrow's show, but today we're focusing on the Milwaukee Fringe Festival. It's on stage at the Marcus Center Saturday and Sunday, and we're joined in the studio now by two of the co-founders, Marquette Theater Professor John Schneider and events and marketing pro Eric Engelbart. Well, gentlemen, welcome to Lake Effect. It is a pleasure to have you both on the show. First time, I think, for both of you.
Yes. Actually, yeah. I when I was with TheaterX and even after that, I was on your show.
That's
the
right.
Last time was talking about a production of Under Milkwood at Marquette.
Oh, my gosh. That was a while ago.
That was quite a while ago.
That's got to be like, is that 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's like, oh my goodness. We're all getting old. How did that happen?
Oh, mercy.
Yeah. So this is year three, am I right?
That's correct.
For the Milwaukee Fringe Festival. Why did you guys want to start a Fringe Festival? I mean, I always think of Milwaukee as having not a lot that you need to be a fringe from, if that makes sense. You know, there are some established things, but it doesn't seem like a real establishment town. Am I wrong about that?
It's not a real establishment town, but there doesn't need to be a fringe from something anymore. Initially, that's how the Edinburgh Fringe started, as a fringe to the first in 1947 Edinburgh International Festival, when the City Fathers of Edinburgh decided to try to bring art from the rest of Europe to Scotland and the British Isles. But pretty quickly, you didn't need to have an international festival, a main festival, in order to have a fringe festival. Just the idea of a fringe festival caught on, particularly in the United States. I was talking to somebody who was writing about the festival this year, and it struck me that back in when I was young and a member of Theater X and touring all over the country all the time with our work, and being welcomed in cities all over the country by other young experimental theaters who were doing work similar to ours. It was like a vaudeville network across the entire United States. And we had a theater on Water Street to which we could welcome people from other places in the country to bring their work and present it. In a sense, a fringe festival is today's version of that kind of thing. The ones that have been around for a while, like the Minnesota Fringe Festival in Minneapolis, is 11 days long and is international now. And people come certainly from all over the country to be part of that festival. Ours is just in a beginning stage.
A nascent stage. And
a nascent stage, yeah. But we hope, you know, our dream is that in the years ahead, people will come from all around the world and bring their work to Milwaukee so that we can see it and so that they can discover Milwaukee.
Well, and you talk about fringe, and I think maybe the type of work that we're talking about is probably more experimental, is probably something you're not going to see on a stage normally here. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's sort of our intention, was to showcase some of the work that people aren't seeing in the mainstream and exposing them to larger audiences at that Marcus Center for the Performing Arts. And, you know, we really believe that Milwaukee has one of the best fine arts scenes in the country, and that this is a way for us to be able to showcase it and be able to give it a wider audience.
I think there's a certain kind of a freak flag that flies here artistically that people take great pride in, and they should, because people are willing to experiment.
Yes. I think that we're on the fringe of everybody's season.
That too.
Yeah, so the work that you see won't be in anybody's season. Yeah, there is a in the performing arts for sure. I think right now dance or dance theater is extremely experimental in Milwaukee. I think the visual arts, that's true of too, although we don't have too much of that, a little bit. And in music, I think there's a lot of experiment as well. Don't you think, Eric?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, we are the type of city that encourages, you know, experimental works and embraces them more so.
Which I find interesting because I'm not from here, and people, you know, you come to Milwaukee and you think, well, this is kind of a, you know, Midwestern city, small city, you know, kind of parochial in some ways. There's a lot of tradition and people are very fond of tradition and hearkening to it. But then you have this. You have Theater X. You mm-hmm. have Theater Gigante doing really interesting work. You've got yeah. all of our site-specific dance companies
yes.
going out and doing this. So it kind of manages to hold both things.
Cooperative performance.
Yes, that's another one.
Quasimondo, physical mm-hmm. theater.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's just kind of this interesting mix, you know, of both the traditional and the experimental. So when you are putting the festival together, now you're in your third year of about to launch it, mm-hmm. how do you vet the groups? What do you look for? Do you have a theme in mind, or are you just trying to find the most interesting stuff that's out there?
Yeah, we have a panel of experts from the different arts, and we kind of go over all our submissions over the course of 2 or 3 days. And we evaluate them based on a few different criteria as far as creativity, professionalism, originality are concerned. And then we try to put together the most, comprehensive combination of acts. So this year we have 10 dance, 9 theater, and 8 music acts all performing. And they sort of represent a wide range of different stylistic choices as well as different subject matter. And we try to make the most interesting possible lineup. And
both here, people from here and people from away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So that's also something that we've seen that's pretty encouraging is we've had submissions from New York and L.A. this year, and we have people coming in from out of town. So we do see ourselves expanding the scope of who recognizes this our festival as part of this grand fringe festival circuit. So.
I love the vaudeville idea, the vaudeville circuit idea.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it is, except that it's not, it doesn't run all year like it used to.
I think everybody else
weekend.
Has to earn a living. have to eat and sleep. Yeah.
We invite, in the winter, we invite people to submit proposals for what they'd like to do. And there are a couple other sort of technical criteria, like it has to fit within basically an hour and 15 minutes. Although we also group short performances together, so we could put 4 15-minute shows together into one block in the festival.
And so I'm assuming it goes over the weekend, but you're only going to be able to see something once. Is that right? It's not repeating.
Yeah, no repeating acts.
No repeating. So yeah. If you want to see it, you better get to the day that it's on.
It's a real festival. You can walk, indoors and outdoors at the Marcus Center, and you can see something in this theater and then come outdoors and see something out there and then go into this other theater and see something else and then go back to the first theater. It's to me, that's just a great thrill and a great privilege to be able to spend my day going from theater performance to dance performance to music performance. It's heaven.
Yeah. Well, and then you can just say, I'm in the mood for this. This looks really interesting. I'm mm-hmm. going to go over there. And you have a certain freedom as an audience member to say, that one speaking to me today, I'm going to go to that.
It's mm-hmm. like a choose your own adventure of the arts.
I like that. I like that. So I know you want to grow it. I know you want to have it be international in scope. How long? It's only year 3. I think you're doing pretty well considering it's only year 3. How long do you think it's going to be before you start getting that cachet and people start coming in? And second part of the question, where's the money going to come from?
Well, really, really honestly, the two things come to mind. One, we have some international people coming not as performers, but as people who could help connect us to theaters in Eastern Europe, for example, and people who will write about it in European journals so that people it'll become more widely known. And the very distinguished independent eye, co-founders of TheaterX back in 1969, are performing in it this year, and they're all over the country all the time, and so they can spread the word. We're doing this without any money, and that is going to be really important to being able to build this thing. Right now, none of the people who are putting it on are paid in any way, shape, or form.
It's a labor of love.
Many of us are a labor of love, and many of us struggle to pay our bills as it is, and so we're very busy with many projects. Erica is a good example. I thank heaven have Social Security.
For now.
At least for now, yeah. But the younger people who are really doing all the legwork on this thing are very busy people.
Is this a nonprofit? Do you have that status, and are you looking for grants? Is that how that's going to work?
Yes. We received funding from the Wisconsin Department of Tourism through a joint effort marketing grant for the first 2 years, and we also received funding from the Wisconsin Arts Board as well. So we've been able to receive some grants.
That pays the performers.
Yeah. So that's the intention of the Wisconsin Arts Board grant, was to pay performers and to cover expenses with the Union House. And the Wisconsin Department of Tourism grant was just to get the word out and try to make people aware of what we were doing.
But you have to build that to build the festival, right?
Yeah, we do. And we really are still working from scratch. You know, the first thing always is to explain to people what is a fringe festival. And why should it exist? The first year, I mean, we're just being really honest. The first year we did, our expenses were much more than we had anticipated, and so we had to ask the artists the first year, invite the artists to donate their performances because we didn't have enough money to pay them. You know, it was a great triumph to not only break even last year, but to be able to pay the artists. So we're moving forward.
Well, like I said, in only the third year to get that far without some sort of big financial base to start with, I think that's pretty good.
The Marcus Center has also been extremely helpful in supporting us.
And Footlights, we have to mention.
And Footlights too, yeah.
Yeah, they donate our programs for us every year, and they work with us to create a real professional experience.
The Intercontinental Hotel puts up our distinguished European visitors. And
so it's a nice mix of community and commercial support.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's like asking you your favorite child, but do you have a particular... I'm going to ask each of you this.
Okay.
What are you most looking forward to seeing? Eric, I'll start with you.
All right, well...
Put you on the spot.
Well, John Schneider's putting on a show this year, and I'm very excited to see his show. He's doing a performance with a piano player, and he's singing and recounting the history of... John, can you tell me more about the show?
Lawrence Hart, the Richard Rodgers first lyricist.
Yeah, I think... The best lyricist.
I love
Lawrence Hart. To me, Rodgers and Hart just had something.
Yeah, they
special.
Do. Heart.
Yes, heart.
Actually.
Yeah. Yep.
And humor.
Yep.
Yeah, so I tell the story of Larry Hart's life and sing the songs with Connie Grauer on piano.
Oh, nice.
And the lyrics mean so much more the more you know about him. The more the lyrics.
He did not have a happy life.
No, he did not.
Which is really unfortunate, but maybe that's what made him the lyricist he was.
Mm-hmm.
To me, they're heart-wrenching.
Yeah. To me, too. And in fact, in rehearsing it, the difficult thing for me is to get through it without crying.
Yeah, keep working on it. All right.
And John's a very evocative performer. I've seen him perform a few times, so I think that show should be kind of a sledgehammer of emotion.
And what day is that?
John, you're going
on Saturday afternoon.
Saturday
afternoon.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. And so, John, I'm going to ask you, what are you most looking forward to seeing once you're done with your show?
Once I'm done with my show, I'll have dinner, and then I will see my first mentors, the independent eye, Conrad Bishop, and his wife, Elizabeth Fuller, co-founders of TheaterX, the company with which I spent my life. They welcomed me into TheaterX in 1971, the beginning of 1971. They live in California now, and they perform all over the country. And so their new performance, which is called Survival, which is about surviving America in
2018.
And it's also very funny and I think lacerating in some ways. They're bringing that, so I'm really looking forward to that very much, of course. And there are groups that have been all 3 years. Sumo Dance Company, do you know them?
I
think they are better and better and better every year, and I'm really excited about that. Present Music is presenting.
And it's Kevin Stahlheim's last year.
Yep,
he's going into his last year as artistic director. We're going to have him on later, probably the beginning of the fall, to talk about the legacy of that. But that's that's amazing.
Yes, it's never been led by anybody but Kevin, so we'll see how that goes. The Lake Arts Project. Do you know them? They teach at the Milwaukee Ballet School, and they work with both professional dancers and student dancers. They're going to be in it for the third year. Katie Ott is going to be there with her dance company for the third year. Angry Young Men Puppets. Do you know them?
I do, I just love the name.
they've been the last thing on Saturday night every year, and they're a little bit lewd, and they're very funny, and it's a great way to end Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Chad Pahaki will be back again.
Chad Pihatsky, he's a multifaceted person, but for the Fringe Festival, we'll refer to him as a performance artist. He gets interesting people together in the city and creates stuff from scratch, and he's going to make a piece again with something called the DIY Chamber Ensemble, I think.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Milwaukee musicians and composers. And he has this clown character that he plays called Valentine, who's unlucky in love. Speaking of Larry Hart, my funny Valentine. Mm-hmm. There's a theme to the festival.
And you didn't even know it. You discovered it here on Lake Effect.
Thanks to you, Bonnie.
That's all right. I'm so looking forward to this. It is a wonderful time, you know, to get together with friends. And also, like you were saying, you know, to be able to just go, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to go over there and I'm going to see. And you know you're not going to see everything,
no.
But you try.
Yeah.
Yeah, you try. And gentlemen, I can't thank you both enough for coming in. And John, best of luck.
Oh, thanks.
I'm looking forward to you particularly. And and Eric, thank you so much for coming in too.
Thank you.
John Schneider and Eric Engelbart are two of the co-founders of the Milwaukee Fringe Festival. The third annual Fringe Fest runs Saturday and Sunday at the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts. You'll find a link to more information at WUWM.com.
We'll take one last break, and then we'll talk with the people responsible for the show that John Schneider said he was most looking forward to, Conrad Bishop and Elizabeth Fuller, creators of Survival. That's when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR. We're back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Before the break, we spoke with two of the co-founders of this weekend's Milwaukee Fringe Festival, which is on stage at the Marcus Center. One of the shows being presented on Saturday is Survival, a new work from Elizabeth Fuller and Conrad Bishop. Theater folks in town might remember them as two of the people behind Theater X, an experimental theater group whose alums include Willem Dafoe and John Kischlein, as well as John Schneider, who we heard a few minutes ago.
Bishop and Fuller left Milwaukee in 1974 and have since performed and created new work as The Independent Eye, which presents Survival, a solo show performed by Fuller. Conrad Fuller and Elizabeth Bishop join us in the studio now. What an honor. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
It is an honor and a pleasure.
Welcome back. First of all.
Yeah, I mean, we were in Milwaukee for a long time. We were here from 68 to 74, and both at UWM at the Fine Arts School, and then later as Theater X.
Right, and Theater X is how I know your names, because there are so many people here who were in Theater X at the time and talk about what it was like then. That was before my time here.
That was an amazing history, because it had a 45-year life.
Yeah, and we also came back a number of times to do presentations there or co-productions in a couple of cases.
And you've traveled through, I think the most recent thing was it King Lear with puppets?
It was King
yes.
Lear with just the
yes.
two of us and about 30 puppets. And it was the amazing coincidence was it was hosted by the University of the Fine Arts School down in the little basement studio, which is where TheatreX did its very first performance in 1969.
Wow.
Same room.
Did it smell the same?
No.
No, they had cleaned it.
Yeah, a couple of times.
A couple of times, once or twice, yeah. I guess I want to talk a little bit about a lifetime of making theater and a lifetime of trying to tell the truth through theater. When you two first started, what drew you to the theater as a medium that you wanted to do that with?
Well, the very first thing for me was in high school when I discovered it was a great way to meet girls. But after that, I expanded my vocabulary.
To truth
and understanding. Yeah. And for me, it was also in high school, and it was a different thing. It was a way to get out of the house because my mother had been a professional comedian, and she was considerably older than most moms are, and she was unreliable and sometimes violent, and the drama club practiced at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it got me out of the house.
Was it also a way to process what was going on?
Later it was, and just the idea of being able to enter another character's skin was wonderful, too. But yeah, we're both high school junkies.
And I think almost... There's a wonderful advantage that I have often said about being an artist of any kind, and that is whatever happens in your life, it's material. You can use it somehow.
And then the two of us met at Northwestern in the drama department there, and he remembers one way of meeting. I remember another, but it's very clear that we did meet. Because we've been together now for 57 years.
Congratulations.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a fantastic milestone.
Yes, absolutely.
It's fairly bizarre, in fact.
Yeah, in this day and age, very, very few people make it that long, and that's terrific. And you've made it that long being artists together, too, not just a couple.
Right.
You know, you've worked together, and you've continued to work together, even after Theater X. You went out to California, is that right?
No,
many stages between
stages
there.
Between okay. That. Yeah. We moved initially to Chicago. We were there a couple of years. We were on the road all the time, so it made no sense to be in a major metropolitan area where you couldn't find a parking place and you smelled the air.
And we had two little kids who were with us in the back of the Dodge van.
So we moved to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and then later to Philadelphia. And then finally back to California.
Now, even though you've not moved back here, you're back here.
We're back here, yes. And it feels right good, as they
say.
Does it? Yes, it does. Our first child was born here, you know, and our first theater company was born here. And it's, you know, you talk about the smell. I smell the lake.
Tell me about what you're presenting here for The Fringe. There's a couple of things you're here for. You're here for Boswell, a Boswell event, and then you're here also to present at The Fringe.
Right. It's two parts of our lives. And one is Boswell is a reading of from our novel, which is our second published novel. And we're really focused on that a lot, although we, for some reason, we just can't tear ourselves away from theater. It just keeps happening.
Well, we don't really want to either.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's 76, I'm 78, and this is a car trip. This is a road trip, and by the time we get home, it'll be like 6,500, 7,000 miles. And that does start to wear on you, and you don't get exercise when you're sitting in the car behind the steering wheel.
And we're
accustomed to going to the gym.
And the other half of it, you can.
Yeah, the stage piece. Well, what we were here before with King Lear, which was enormous, and it was 100 minutes of high intensity performing, and so we just decided, well, let's take care of ourselves and make the next thing a little smaller and a little quieter. So we made a solo show for me called Survival. And I have two primary roles in it, although I don't go anywhere. I get on stage and stay there until I leave. But it's really kind of nice. One of them is a kind of a rough-hewn, small-town handywoman my age, whose name is Lou. And she's been invited to wherever the place is to give a talk on survival. She's not really quite sure why. Although at some point she says, yeah, of course, you look at me and you wonder what qualifies me as an expert in survival. Well, hell, I'm 78. That's like a PhD. So she alternates between what she knows of from her life in getting from one day to the next, like all the rest of us. When she just gets stretched beyond her limits, her inner clown, Bozo, comes out. And Bozo is just a happy, she's just, you know, oh, you know what the great thing about clowns? We do stuff. We don't just sit there and say, oh, what'll I do? What'll I do? We gird up our loins and take a deep breath and rev up our engines and do something stupid.
So will you be doing something stupid?
Frequently.
Frequently.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So it's two sides of the survival element.
So in the 57 years you've been together, and a little longer than that, making theater, what would you say is the thing that you have learned? What is the best lesson you've learned in a lifetime of making theater?
Well, for me, I guess, just do what the story wants and try to figure out why you started this particular thing in the first place, and then find where it goes, and then finally find an audience for it. And that's not the norm, but it's kind of what keeps us alive. We have had the disadvantage, I think, of never branding ourselves, and the great advantage of never branding ourselves. Everything is very, very different. Those who saw King Lear will, oh, where are the puppets? But what really grabs me is the story. And if I already know from the outset what that wants to be and what that says and what my inner being is trying to convey, that's not a good start. What I want to start with is complete befuddlement. And why am I doing this? And then during the course of the work, you start discovering some of that.
Yeah, what is the story I'm trying to tell?
Yeah. And it's your audience that helps you find that. And our audience over all of our touring has mostly been under the radar grassroots. We have often performed in very small towns for people who've never seen live performance before. They come in and they say, where's the movie screen? Because they think they're coming to a movie. But the stories that we tell are often funny, but they are generally very perplexing looks at the distance between what people think they are and what they really do, and what they think they want and what they really do. And so it's edgy. And people often say, I want to come back and see that again. It went by and there's more there than I saw. But the amazing thing is we could perform. Back when we were in Milwaukee, we would do the exact same sketches one night for a prison and the next night for the Junior League Wives. And they would both laugh. They would both understand it, and they would both laugh. Or we would be performing in New England, and then we would be performing at a black junior high school in Americus, Georgia. And likewise, you never, ever underestimate the humanity of the people you're telling to, because they will tell you back what you said.
Why do you think your work speaks to everyone so universally? Is it because you don't talk down to them?
I think in part it's that, but that's that, no, I don't think that's the real thing. We leave our stories, I would call our storytelling lattice work. There's lots and lots of stuff that's not there. It's the bones, it's the outline, it's the emotions, it's the real people on stage. But three people sitting in the exact same audience seeing the exact same performance have seen three different things because they bring their own experience to it. In most of what we do, we don't say how you're supposed to feel or how you're supposed to relate to it. That's the individual person's response that fills that in. And I think that's a big deal. There's so much live performance that's canned. You might as well be watching it on TV because you're not part of the equation. And with what we do, we don't work that way. We don't work that way. We work with the kinds of things that will resonate differently for different people.
It sounds like you leave room for the audience.
Yeah,
right.
It's a matter of, I think with survival, it's been a process of, as with any comedy, finding how it breathes and how fast do you go and where do you emphasize, but also the tempo of the audience that's listening to it.
Yeah, so it has to adapt.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about really well-done live performance is that not only are you as the audience member
expected to be part of it. You know, you're allowed to somehow contribute to whatever's happening on stage.
But lest people be apprehensive, we don't pull people up out of the audience and say,
no,
do
I didn't.
This. No,
right.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No. It's just emotionally that your presence is kind of required.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with survival, most often at the end of the show, and I'm talking with people afterwards, people are smiling, but their cheeks are wet.
So before I let you go, I know you're back for this. Are you looking forward to going any place in particular in Milwaukee? Old haunts that you want to revisit?
Well, we don't have much time, actually, with two performances and then trying to deal with all of the little survival tactics we have in the past, although, looking for the house that we used to live in and discovering that it's a taco stand. I don't know.
That you want that emotional. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Well, and I'd like to say one extra thing, but this is different in Milwaukee because I've discovered that I have a brother here. I'm an adopted person, and I have found my brother.
And he's here in Milwaukee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How fantastic.
Yeah. Yes.
And have you met before?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
I came out in May and met the two of them, him and his wife.
How fantastic. Yeah. So this is going to be the first time that they see you in performance?
Yes.
Oh, wow. So all those years of not knowing you existed.
I was searching for 40 years, and then finally I found. It's a fairy tale.
It is a fairy tale. It is. And I suspect that it will find its way into another performance at some point.
I think so,
I think so, too. Well, Elizabeth and Conrad, it has been such a pleasure having you in the studio.
Thank you for letting us spend time with you.
Oh, my goodness. And I am looking forward to seeing your performance. And best of luck with Boswell as well.
Thank you.
And don't be strangers. Come back.
Yes. Elizabeth? Oh, yes.
Conrad Bishop and Elizabeth Fuller are the Independent Eye. They have two appearances on this visit to Milwaukee. Tonight, they will talk about their novel, Galahad's Fool, at Boswell Book Company. And Saturday, their production, Survival, which stars Fuller, is on stage at the Marcus Center as part of the Milwaukee Fringe Festival. You'll find more information about both events at WUWM.com. That is all for the Thursday edition of the show. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect here on Listener Supported, 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Keep listening. It's 11 o'clock, and Fresh Air is next.